minus 10 seconds. The countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. Greetings! It is once again Saturday, the 17th of February, in the glorious future year of 2024. I will mention, for those who are not aware of the happy news, that Tobe is back among us. And so I do anticipate a brand new Dubious Goals Committee show coming up in half an hour. So that's, you know, good news. He actually got out of the house the other day. I was listening to one of his shows on... I was listening to it after it aired because I slept through it, but he was mentioning, you know, he's out and about, but also not overexerting himself. So hopefully he will continue to improve. As for myself, I fear that I only continue to get worse. I went on eBay last night looking for nuclear power-related materials the way I usually do, things like visitor center brochures. Anyway, and bought a whole wad of them. And I'm still bidding on a couple of items which are listed auction style. It used to be that was all eBay did, but nowadays there are very few auction style listings. One is for a model, a salesman sample, is all I can describe it, of a GE fuel rod for light water reactors. Which, of course, the main thing that makes it a salesman's sample, it's got all of the parts, although, of course, the fuel pellets are simulated, but it's not 4 meters long. So, if you wonder just what it is that I spend the money that comes to me by your Patreon contributions on, if you're a subscriber there, patreon.com/man_and_atom, the answer basically is stuff which I want to use for exhibits and displays, stuff which I think or which I want to scan and put online, things, public information materials, models, and things of that nature, which I think will help get people interested not only in the facts, but also in the story about nuclear energy specifically. I also have a lot of that material about space travel, but I've had more of that for longer. And it's somewhat easier to get, in my experience. And there is one thing that I'm looking at, which I'm very... Gosh, I want it! Whether I want to pay what's being asked is another story. It is a cutaway model of a pressurized water reactor. And it is specifically a commemorative of initial criticality at the Clinton nuclear power station. Now, which is located near Clinton, Illinois. Anyway, but that's not what I was thinking about exactly. What I was thinking about is, of course, that speaking of initial criticalities, Votal 4 is now critical, right? Votal 4 has attained initial criticality and is working up to commercial operation. They had more trouble with feed water pumps, as usual, but they were hoping to have commercial operation in the first quarter of this year. Now they're expecting it in the second quarter, which means, practically speaking, assuming there are no major hiccups, which there certainly shouldn't be, considering that they already ran, right, Vodal 3 is already in full commercial operation. So assuming that Vodal 4 follows Vodal 3, right, the problems that they had with Vodal 3, they should be able to deal with fairly easily in Vodal 4. It's spelled V-O-G-T-L-E, and I can only pronounce it Vodal because if you try to pronounce the G, I don't know what language you're speaking. Anyhow, but yes, so Vodal 3 is in full commercial operation. Vodal 4 should be in full commercial operation within a couple of months. And that is very cheering news. Now, speaking of my Patreon campaign, which again, I'm always grateful for the support. One of the other things, well, of course, if I'm doing displays at events, then I'm presumably traveling to events to put on the displays, which also costs money. But one of the things that my supporters can expect is mail, postcards typically, mail from the various exotic places that I get to in the course of my advocacy activities. And I need to get more consistent about doing that, you know. But, yeah, mail. So, I put some mail, I took some to the post office this morning, as a matter of fact, some more sample copies of Blast going out to various people who'd requested them and a few people who didn't, but who I think might be interested, and some other stuff of that kind. A couple more coin cards, one to Adam D., SDFer Adam D., who subscribed to the Patreon, and one to SDFer Snowdusk, DJ Snowdusk of the Intergalactic Wasabi Mix, who sent me some money because he was impressed with what I was doing, which I always appreciate. Anyhow, so if you're wondering, you know, you sign up for the Patreon campaign, you'll get mail from the places I go to. Where am I planning on going, you may ask. Well, I can tell you now that this year the World Science Fiction Convention is in Glasgow, in Scotland. That's the 8th through the 12th of August. So it's actually falls just after my birthday. And because the World Science Fiction Convention is outside of North America, there is a NASFIC, and the NASFIC is going to be held in Buffalo, New York, the 18th to the 21st of July. So my tentative plan is to put on an exhibit at Buffalo, then cross the Atlantic, put on an exhibit at Glasgow also. Now, to what extent they'll be the same exhibit, you know, there's only so much I can carry with me across the Atlantic, and so there is an extent to which, you know, some of the materials will probably be printed on site. You know, I'll probably take some things to Buffalo with me and ship them home again before I leave the country, then cross the Atlantic, and then printed materials very likely will be printed in Scotland, right? And apply to poster boards or what have you, the same way I did with the materials that I used at the Winnipeg NASFIC this past year. Now, what else is there to say about that? Well, my itinerary, such as it is, I'm planning on traveling with a friend after the Glasgow Worldcon, and one of the places that I want to see, she wants to see, is in Cherbourg in France. So there's a ferry which will take you from Portsmouth to Cherbourg. In Cherbourg, there's a maritime museum, and at the maritime museum in Cherbourg is the submarine, Le Redoutable, the first French nuclear-powered submarine. And so I'd really like to see that. She'd really like to see it. I bet they have postcards. I will probably mail, of course. If you've encountered me before, you know that I take great delight in mailing picture postcards from places they are not of. And so, you know, I've got a bunch of postcards for the Glasgow Worldcon, which are very nicely science fictional. They got a science fiction artist illustrator to do them a whole series of postcards showing off various aspects of his style. But I'll probably send, you know, postcards of, you know, Greece or Egypt or San Francisco from Glasgow. And I'll probably buy postcards at the Maritime Museum in Cherbourg only to send them at some later date from some completely different location. This is my modus operandi. Anyway, as I say, if you support me on Patreon, you will get mail of this kind. Assuming, of course, that you provide me with your mailing address, which it does ask you to do. But, of course, you can always not do that. WXBox Boss in Com is expressing a little confusion over this idea. Apparently is not accustomed to getting mail, but I guarantee you, if you haven't received mail from me yet, you should be getting some soon. At least I sent some to the address you provided. And F. Fogg is working on improved graphics for Blast number one, for which he has my immense gratitude. You know, the graphics that I made up are sort of kind of good enough. That's all. And, you know, for the zine format, don't have to be great, but I would like better ones. In matter of fact, I just printed off 5 more sample copies, and I suspect those may be the last that I print off before going to full production. And full production basically implies putting it to bed, making the PDFs available for anyone who wants to print them at home, which I haven't yet done. I got to put up a little... So one of the nice things about doing things partly physically and partly on the web is I could put up a web page for Blast Number 1, which gives a bunch of footnotes, like where to find the story about Frédéric Joliot rushing across town to make a deal with the Union Minière du Haut-Katanga for the peaceful uses of atomic energy in 1939. Ah, good. WXBox has Boss. I see, keep saying it's like Xbox, but no, WXBox has in fact received some of the mail from me, and so is well aware now of what I mean when I say that it comes slathered with space topical postage stamps. And the occasional atomic energy postage stamp, but there are just so many fewer of those, at least in the U.S. series, that it's mostly the space stamps. That is the other thing. If I'm sending mail from the U.S. at least, I've got lots and lots of U.S. space stamps. So, Tin hopes that I can cross the Atlantic by rocket ship. You know, that is something. There's a something known as the V Prize for the first commercial, or first anybody, I guess, to cross the Atlantic from launching from Wallops Island, Virginia, by rocket ship. And, you know, that was the thing that the space shuttle pilots always wanted to do and were never allowed to do, was abort transatlantic, which was... Nobody, not even John Young, who could be considered the hottest pilot of all hot pilots of all time, was willing to stake their life on the abort return to launch site mode of the space shuttle, where they would dump the external tank and ride the solid rocket boosters, do this bizarre maneuver, and try to ride the solid rocket boosters back to to the landing strip at Kennedy Space Center, nobody thought that was really viable. Nobody thought they could really survive doing that. It was much, much too difficult. On the other hand, all the space shuttle pilots, and particularly John Young, really wanted to do abort transatlantic. Now, you may ask, what is abort transatlantic? Well, essentially, it's 15 minutes from Kennedy Space Center to Zaragoza, Spain, which is the first designated abort landing site for the space shuttle. But NASA was never willing to allow them to do it. They did abort to orbit a couple of times, not intentionally, but because they had an engine out on the way up. That involved using the OMS engines much longer and harder than they were normally intended for. But given that the OMS engines were based on the Command and Service Module engine for the Apollo program, the Service Propulsion System, which was actually designed to lift the CSM stack off the surface of the moon in a direct ascent configuration. Those OMS engines were actually much more capable than their normal use would imply, which is what made abort to orbit work at all. And generally speaking, you wound up in a somewhat lower orbit with a somewhat shorter lifetime, but it meant that you actually did get to do at least some of the things that were planned for that flight. Anyway, but they never got to do abort transatlantic, and everybody wanted to do it, but NASA just wouldn't sign off on it. You know, they would say things like, oh, it's too risky or whatever, but I think the real reason, as G. Harry Stein, writing under the pseudonym Lee Corey, pointed out in his story Shuttle Down, the real reason is that the shuttle carrier aircraft, the 747 that they used to piggyback the shuttle around the country, for example, when it landed at Edwards Air Force Base in California, or the one time it landed at White Sands, they never did that again, Edwards Air, you know, they put it on the back of a 747, which would then proceed by short hops to KSC. Well, why did it proceed by short hops? The answer is that 747 was the short-range variant. They were built for Japan Airlines. And the only way they got them across the Pacific and to Japan in the first place was to take out all the seats and put in fuel bladders that the, I guess the seats actually had to go by ocean freight. Anyhow, but yeah, it was short-range 747. And so it couldn't actually cross the Atlantic, at least in one hop. I don't know. They might have been able to fly to Bermuda, and then from Bermuda to the Azores, and then from the Azores to Spain. But they certainly wouldn't have been able to fly direct from Zaragoza back to KSC. And I think the NASA people just look at the logistics of it and had a splitting headache. But Tobe, of course, is a big fan of G. Harry Stein, because G. Harry Stein was really the father of American model rocketry. He was one of those unusual folks who was very active in model rocketry, high-power model rocketry, and also in building actual space launch vehicles. So that's kind of the, do you know... I mean, you know, the DCX is sort of straddles the boundary, right? Because it used an RL-10 engine, a Centaur upper stage engine, that G. Harry Stein just happened to have in his garage. That was the secret of how they managed to build and operate a rocket-propelled vertical takeoff and landing system prototype for an actual spacecraft, on money that was intended for a paper study. Harry Stein just happened to have the engine in his garage. Which sounds pretty insane when you say it out loud, doesn't it? But he was also the author of a number of, magazine articles and books on model rocketry, and one of his real contributions was in formulating safety rules to keep model rocketeers from blowing themselves up. Before he came on the scene, amateur rocketry, model rocketry, high-power amateur rocketry were very, very much regarded with suspicion by the authorities, medical professionals, etc. And Harry Stein really was instrumental in formulating safety rules, principles, and procedures for amateur rocketeers to follow so they didn't get killed, they didn't kill anyone else, and they didn't cause massive property damage. Anyway, I wanted to take a few minutes, and this is, let's see, I should mention that at my Tubenix, you can see a new film-to-video transfer if you're at all interested. This one is a German informational film intended for schools, 60mm sound color film from the 1984 about nuclear fusion research, and it shows the among other things the Wendelstein Stellarator. Now you may remember, Wendelstein X7, isn't that recently built? Well, the thing was there was a Wendelstein L7 machine, or 7L and 7X anyway. And so that one you can see, and then you can also see the work they were doing at that time on the 7X machine, which gives you an idea of just how long fusion research really takes, and why I don't regard fusion as likely to contribute materially to our energy needs in the next century. In fact, there are some very good informational graphics in there. At one point, the presenter, or the head of the Max Planck Institute for Plasma Physics, who's presenting some of the information, he shows a series of cutouts, which are scale models to the same scale, of the cross-section of the fusion chamber of various toroidal fusion machines, starting with ones actually in operation at that time, and going up to a hypothetical, or postulated, future power plant fusion machine. And it's so much larger that it really gives you a feel for the difficulties involved in the work. Tin says, it could be just a testament to how long it takes to get anything built in Germany. And that's not completely wrong. I mean, it's not quite like the New Berlin Airport. But it is a little, I mean, of course, the new Wendelstein machine is actually up on the North Sea. It's not at Garching near Munich. It's up on the North Sea at the site of the old East German nuclear power plant, actually, at Greifswald. I'm sorry, it's on the Baltic, not the North Sea. Greifswald on the Baltic. But it really is a difficult problem. I mean, you know, JET at Culham, the big joint European Taurus experimental fusion machine, which came online in the 80s, spent much longer not operating than operating because it was constantly being torn down and modified. Right? And that's the thing, is that when you're doing experiments, you constantly have to tear them down and modify them. And fusion machines are so complex that tearing them down and modifying them is a real mammoth job. But, anyway, on my way out, so we're coming to an end here. We're coming to Tobe's show soon. But on the way out, I thought I'd also mention, I saw an estimate the other day that said that cryptocurrency, which, you know, certainly had a claim to be regarded as a frontrunner for the scam of the century, at least until generative AI came on the scene. Well, both of them are notorious for using ludicrously large amounts of electricity. And, of course, computer power doesn't just mean electric power. It also means the energy and raw materials used to manufacture those computers and all that, which is a real problem because, as I've mentioned in this space before, the major data center contractors often have contracts that basically require the servers to be scrapped after 3 years. They don't get sold in the secondary market. And so that results, no matter how energy efficient the new servers are, that results in a massive waste of energy. Whereas, you know, second and third tier users, even home users, could be using 10, 15 year old servers and saving an enormous amount of energy in the manufacturing process, even if they waste a little in operation. Instead, those things are being literally scrapped, which is bad, in my opinion, right? It's a waste of materials, it's a waste of labor, etc. But it makes somebody's profit margins look good, and that's what's important in this world, isn't it? Well, I was noticing an estimate that said that cryptocurrency uses roughly, and of course it's got to be very roughly, 2% of U.S. electricity consumption last year. Now, what is 2% of U.S. electricity consumption? Well, U.S. electricity consumption was roughly 4 trillion kilowatt hours last year. That's a lot! 2% of that, you know, we I can give it to you as a numerical figure, right? You know, 78.5 billion kilowatt hours. Anyway, it's a huge number. Anyway, 78.5 billion kilowatt hours. That's not what's really important here. What's important, I think, I mean, yeah, the absolute number is important, but it's also important to say, what does that translate to? Well, for one thing, it's 12 times all the electricity used by electrified railways in the USA. I mean, I'm looking at 2022 statistics, but 2023 can't be that much different. 2022 statistics, 2% of U.S. electricity is 12 times the electricity used by all electrified railways in the USA. It is also more than the total electrical consumption of the states of Alaska, Delaware, Hawaii, Maine, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Utah, and Vermont, plus the District of Columbia, all rolled together. That's more than 7.5 million people in a country which uses close to 4 times the electricity per head of population of the world average. That's a lot! And for what? I mean, as far as you can tell, just basically for scams and criminal activities. Now, I don't think this is the only way, I don't think this is the only thing that that's true of, right? I mean, the truth is a lot of energy, which is being used in the computer sector, is being used for scams of one kind or another. And, you know, it may be dressed up as targeted advertising or this or that, but a lot of it's just, it's scams or it's worthless activity or it's things that don't make anyone's life better. But I think partly this is a symptom of 0% interest rates also. You know, I had somebody try to tell me, well, you know, nuclear power plants won't get built because we've reached the end of 0% interest rates. And of course, I also see the Wall Street Journal saying, when will the Fed drive interest rates lower again? 0% interest rates or ultra-low interest rates have a very strong tendency, because you can't make any money doing anything real, essentially, have a strong tendency to encourage scams. There are scams everywhere. Somebody said to me, oh, well, we installed so much solar last year, it's more solar than all of the nuclear power plants ever built. Well, of course, as you know, that doesn't mean anything because there's no correlation between kilowatts nameplate of PV installation and kilowatt hours generated. As I've said, in my neighborhood, I've seen PV panels going up on the north sides of roofs. How many kilowatt hours will those installations generate in a year? 800, perhaps? Who knows? Very little. It's a scam, in effect. It's a scam. right? I'm not saying that solar itself is a scam, but the way it's being marketed is a scam. Keep a lookout. Energy, renewable energy, people like to promote.